Good Wednesday morning, everybody. Brian Newbert here again from goldenblack.com, live where else but at home. This is your goldenblack.com daily quarantine for Wednesday morning. I will admit, I am shooting on a Tuesday night. I have to make it very quick because this wall over here is basically all window. And when it gets really warm out, the sun really beats on it, this place becomes a sauna. I cannot really turn the fan on high because the whirring messes with the video here, or the audio here, the video and the audio in this case. So I am going to try to make these a little bit more concise than they have been. That is completely contrary to my long-winded, blowhard nature, but I am going to do the best I can. Once again, Wednesday mornings, goldenblack.com, daily quarantine simulcast, brought to you by our sponsors, Purdue Federal Credit Union, Fox Purdue Bookstores, the Sixth Street Dive Restaurant, First Source Bank, East End Grill, and the Charters Team Remax Ability Plus. As always, want to remind you once again, the Sixth Street Dive in Lafayette remains open for carryout, as do our longtime friends of the business, Arnie's and Bruno's, not Brunies like I called them the other day, as well as the Whitaker Inn in West Lafayette. I believe that's where we're getting dinner tonight, or so my wife tells me. Need a topic for today. Yesterday, you may or may not be aware, but we had an hour-long call with Matt Painter for kind of his season wrap-up to talk about a variety of things going on. And in case you haven't noticed, a lot's going on right now. Really, nothing's going on, but everything's going on. So interesting little dichotomy there about life today, isn't it? What I figured I'd do for today is just react to what Matt Painter said in his press conference yesterday. It's what we do in the media. We kind of react to things. We're like a series of different emojis. We have a different reaction for everything. I'm not going to do the Bob Knight game face thing here where I'm going to make a bunch of reactions. But that is what I'm going to do with this this particular simulcast today. Just talk about some things that Painter talked about yesterday at our prodding, and just kind of give a couple of thoughts on each, I guess. Really riveting stuff, I know. You can listen to that full press conference on our YouTube page. You might be accessing this via YouTube. If so, scroll down by one, and you will see something that is an audio file of his press conference yesterday. I have a story on our site from last night about I have two stories on our website yesterday, one a quick little notebook and one a story about his reaction to Matt Harms transferring. There are at least two more stories to come out of this to come. Wednesday is booked with a special sort of thing I have planned for a retrospective on Painter's hiring at Purdue back in 2004, but there will be a couple of different stories from that press conference as well. But you can also get the gist of it right here. So a couple of things he talked about, I kind of asked him to reflect on the season a little bit, maybe what Purdue was missing, why the season turned out the way it did, knowing full well the season wasn't even brought to term, so to speak, because the season was cut short by our dear friend COVID-19. I say that sarcastically, of course. I'm not a coronavirus fan, nor should any of you be. I'm distinctly anti-coronavirus these days. What was I saying? I don't remember what I was saying. I think we can safely agree the end result of this season would have been Purdue playing in the NIT. History will ever immortalize all things as being possible. Purdue could have won a couple games in the Big Ten tournament. Purdue might have made the NCAA tournament, but I think the odds were stacked against that particular outcome. So I think for all intents and purposes, we can safely look at this season as having likely ended in the NIT, whether that was with a loss in the NIT or a championship of the NIT, one or the other would be debatable. But I do think Purdue would have missed the NCAA tournament. I don't think I'm going out on a ledge by saying that. What was Purdue missing this season that was the likely outcome? Obviously, if you followed our coverage, you know, throughout the season, and thank you if you did, there were a lot of big picture themes that we talked about all season long. And I don't think Painter really said anything yesterday. Obviously he said things yesterday that he didn't say during the season. That's kind of the nature of talking about the season after the season. But I don't think he really said anything outside of what we told you through our own two eyes, or my own two eyes, I guess I should say. One of them being competitiveness. You know, as I said all season long, this was kind of my code for this isn't the most competitive team Matt Painter's had, but this is a good way to say it, is that this is a team full of really good kids, really good people, good enough basketball players, but very few killers. And that is a compliment to some extent, But the killer part of it is what I mean by that, obviously, is the competitive streak. I don't think it was an accident that the teams that were the brashest, most crap-talking of the Big Ten's so-called nouveau riche. Did I pronounce it right? Nouveau riche. I classify them as Rutgers, Illinois, and Penn State. They are three very brash teams. They talked a lot of trash, and they were undefeated against Purdue this season, the three of them. All three of them won in Mackey Arena, which if I told you that a year ago, that Penn State, Illinois, and Rutgers were going to come into Mackey Arena and win, that would have been grounds for some sort of punitive action to be taken by law enforcement, because I don't have no idea what that even means. But I had something teed up to say, and I thought better of it, and that's what I ended up with. So such is the nature of live recorded television. But anyway, Purdue, those really competitive, really brash teams, Purdue obviously, you know, didn't fare so well against them. I think that was a reflection of Purdue missing a certain something that would have allowed it to throw a stronger punch when it was punched in the face, so to speak, to use horrible competitiveness cliches. I do think Purdue was missing something there. Maybe part of that was experience, but I do think that had to come from Purdue's most experienced players. I think we can all agree that teams typically go as their returning older guys go, and I don't think it's any secret that the guys coming back from last year's Elite Eight team, to a man, probably didn't have the seasons that they, you know, aimed to have. I think Evan Boudreau was the exception. I think Sasha Stefanovic, to a certain extent, was an exception. I think Eric Hunter had a solid season. I don't think Matt Harms, I don't think Nojel Eastern, certainly not Aaron Wheeler, didn't necessarily have the seasons I think they came into this year hoping to have, and I think Purdue needed them to be the team that a lot of us thought they were going to be, myself included. I thought this would be a 20-plus win NCAA tournament team. It was not. I think competitiveness had a good amount to do with that. Decision-making was the other thing that Painter talked about. Just to follow up on competitiveness, too, I would use that as an umbrella to cover things such, too, as what Painter seemed to talk about all season long on a number of occasions that now makes a lot of sense about how, like on day one of practice, Painter talked to them about Carson Edwards and asked them, hey, how many of you have put this much time into your game? How much of you have worked as hard at basketball as he did? And I think now that you look back on it, he was saying that for a reason. There must have been some sort of red flag there for him. And I think the product on the floor kind of now brings that into some clarity, what he was talking about exactly all season long. I don't think this is, again, the best way I can put it is that this was a team full of nice kids, good people, good enough basketball players, but very few killers. I don't know if this was the team that was going to step on your chest to win a basketball game. I don't know if this is a team that necessarily lives for basketball, necessarily lives for winning, so to speak. Purdue's had some really competitive teams over the years. Purdue's had some teams that I wouldn't have considered to be necessarily killers either that were still really good. But this team at this stage of its development, I just don't think maybe had that so-called killer instinct, that edge, as Matt Painter would say. Decision-making was the other one. You know, I think that I talked about this all year long. I thought Purdue needed more mature guard play. I think they needed better decision-making. I think, again, your older guys, you know, weren't your best decision makers. I thought Eric Hunter did a pretty good job at the end of the year, kind of growing into that role of having the guy with the ball in his hands a lot. I don't think Nojel Eastern had a great decision-making season. By any means, I think Isaiah Thompson in time can be pretty good in this sort of area, but I just didn't think Purdue had a great decision-making season from its backcourt. I thought Purdue was a passive team in the backcourt for the most part, whether that was getting into their cuts, getting through physical defense, getting the ball where it needed to go at all times, being aware. You know, if Purdue gets the ball inside a little more consistently early in the season, you know, things might have turned out a little bit differently. If Purdue gets the ball to Matt Harms a little more against Texas, if Purdue gets the ball to Matt Harms, certainly in the second half at Marquette, you know, Purdue's 3-0 and probably makes the NCAA tournament that never even happened. But I think there was a growing process there with brand new guards. That was always going to be the case. But I think you could have safely assumed that they were going to overcome it a little bit faster than they turned out to. I thought the guard play, you know, was kind of lacking all season long. I think that had a lot to do with a lot of Purdue's offensive difficulties, getting into half-court offense, getting Matt Harms the ball on screen and roll, you know, all sorts of different things that being ready to shoot when the ball comes your way, just little stuff like that really adds up in the backcourt. Purdue went from having really domineering, I don't want to say always dominating guard play, but domineering gameplay, highly influential guards in Carson Edwards and Ryan Klein that the entire team existed around, to really something much less than that. I think the guys in the program now will get better. Eric Hunter is going to be a good college player. Sasha Stefanovic is going to be a good college player. I think Isaiah Thompson is going to be a good college player. Obviously, we'll talk about the newcomers when we get to that segment of this highly formal, highly scripted, highly well-polished simulcast. But I think Purdue's guard play will be much better next season, largely because there's not really anywhere to go but up. One of the big topics yesterday talking to Painter was, the Matt Harms issue and him transferring out of Purdue. Obviously, something Purdue didn't want to happen, a very disappointing occurrence. Matt Harms is a good player. People like him. I think he would have been a big part of next year's team, obviously. I think he was a big part of this year's team, even though he didn't have the season he necessarily wanted to have. How things turn out for him, we shall see. He obviously wants something different. He was going to be Purdue's backup center next year. He did not play more than 20 minutes in a game more than once in the final 13 games of the season. A lot of that had to do with injury. A lot of that just had to do with, don't know if he ever really found a niche this season, but I think injuries were a really big deal for him. I think he probably like to find a place where he can be featured a little bit more, play a little bit more. The quote he gave to Rivals.com about wanting to showcase an NBA-ready skill set was something unlike anything I'd ever hear Matt Harms say about himself. That was very unlike anything he'd ever said about himself at Purdue about his own personal ambition. I think the part of that that's interesting isn't the NBA skill set. I've always been a huge fan of him as a pro prospect, as I've said many times over the years. But the NBA ready part of it, I think, is the part that could have raised some eyebrows. I think he's a pro one day. At what level, we shall see. I don't know what one season somewhere else might do to enhance his stock. Now, of course, he's 23 years old or something like that. I think his body kind of is what it is at this point. His body type is such that he's never going to be Shaquille O'Neal, obviously. But he does have an NBA skill set. He can shoot pick and pop jumpers. He can run the floor. He's long. He can block shots. He can guard ball screens. He is today's NBA in a lot of ways. Now, whether or not he's wired to play at that kind of level, that is going to remain to be seen, obviously. He has a long way to go to be somebody, I think, who can thrive at that level, but that doesn't mean there's no shame in that. I mean, he can, if he has a great year wherever he goes next, if he works out really well thereafter, there isn't any reason to think, in my opinion, that his skill set doesn't get him an opportunity potentially to play in the NBA. If not, he's a guy who plays in Europe for until he's 60, probably, because he's a no-brainer for a long, lucrative overseas career. This is a weird time right now with all that's going on for a player to decide he's going to go overseas and play professionally. If this COVID-19 stuff wasn't going on, you do sort of wonder if maybe he would have just tried to go back home and play overseas instead of transferring somewhere else, because this is a really weird time to transfer, because he's going to go somewhere, and if Purdue replaces him with somebody, that person's going to come into Purdue, might not meet his new team until the fall, might only have a couple of weeks to learn a system as opposed to a couple months. You're almost set up to fail as a transfer this particular year because of this off-season brouhaha, thanks once again to our good friend coronavirus. But do want to see him succeed. I really like that kid. Everybody really likes that kid. He's a good person. I thought he was going to be a much better leader than he turned out to be, but I think he's a really conscientious kid who cares about other people, thinks beyond himself, and is just a good person. And personally, when you cover guys, you tend to root for the guys you like to a certain extent to be successful. Maybe not on a game-to-game basis. You don't sit there during the game saying, I hope this guy does this or whatever, but you like to see good people succeed, and I think Matt Harms is a really good person, and I think he will, in time, hopefully for his sake, succeed, because this is a bold move he is making, and this is not a move he's making that doesn't come without some measure of risk. I wanted to go 10 minutes. I'm already at 15. Sad. you know, we talked before about Purdue's guards and what they have coming back, and I just wanted to, I guess, talk about the newcomers. You know, we have all offseason to talk about this stuff, but I didn't want to skip over this point here. Purdue's going to have great competition next season for playing time, and I think that, you know, Mason Gillis and Brandon Newman coming out of redshirt are one thing. I think those are probably, based on everything I've seen and heard, those are two of Purdue's hardest working, most competitive guys. They're automatically going to probably up the ante a little bit for other people. Jaden Ivey and Ethan Morton are two guys who are impact type of recruits, the two best guards in a single class Matt Painter has ever signed at Purdue, two of probably the top five guards overall he's ever signed. When you look at guys like Carson Edwards, Dakota Mathias, Etuan Moore, obviously, both of these guys would be in that top five, six, seven of guards Matt Painter has ever signed at Purdue, and they're coming in together. And both of them speak to a specific need in this team, whether it's competitiveness, whether it's basketball IQ. Ethan Morton's an elite high school passer. Jaden Ivey's an elite athlete who happens to be a really good, really well-rounded scorer, a really aggressive personality type, somebody who's going to take charge, I think, in time. Whether he can do that right away, I don't know. Ethan Morton's the same way. These are two guys who are going to want the ball in their hands. And I think this Purdue team this year, that was one of its big problems, is who out there wanted the ball when, you know what was hitting the fan. Both of these guys, I think in time at least, maybe right away for all we know, are going to be that type of player. They're exactly what Purdue needs, exactly when Purdue needs it. Purdue has gotten that sort of player before. Dakota Mathias was the direct panacea for everything that ailed Purdue moving forward or prior in the backcourt. And I think these guys are kind of right up that alley in terms of what's coming in, when it's coming in, and why it's so important. The problem here with the freshmen is that, and this is important, this is really important, I think. Not that everything I say isn't important, but I think this is an important point to make. This offseason is going to suck for college basketball teams. It's the least of anyone's worries. The world's greatest concern right now is not what's going to happen with Ethan Morton's ability to learn the playbook in West Lafayette, Indiana in June. People are dying, and we're sitting here talking about, oh, the freshmen are going to have a hard time learning offenses. But be that as it may, we are a sports website, so we're going to talk about sports. June and July are really important for newcomers in college basketball programs. It's their opportunity to play with their teammates, to practice to a certain extent, individual workouts, learning the playbook, more than anything, learning their teammates, getting to know their teammates, building some chemistry, getting to know their coaches, adjusting to academics in college, adjusting the structure in a lot of cases. That won't be much of an issue for Ethan Morton or Jaden Ivey, but it is always something that's important for freshmen. For all we know, these guys, and things could turn around and everything could resume to normal in a month and a half, whatever it may be, we don't know that. But it's very possible that Ethan Morton and Jaden Ivey and Zach Edey, their classmate, really their career starts in August, September, whatever it may be. We just don't know at this point. Purdue has obviously moved classes to online also throughout the summer. So I hope I got that right. If I didn't, so these guys are most likely going to be denied the traditional freshman offseason. And I think that that's really a disappointment because these guys were going to come in and have such an opportunity to be impact type of players. You know, Purdue was going to go to Europe in August for, I think, 12 days or something like that, a bunch of practices. I don't know how many games. But that's a worthwhile experience. You know, the last time Purdue did that was the Swanigan sophomore year team, and he went on to be an All-American. Carson Edwards got his first playing experience in Spain that year. Obviously, he went on to have a very good freshman season. Whether or not Spain had a lot to do with that, I don't know. It could not possibly, under any circumstances, have hurt. These guys would have gotten to actually play games with their new teams, and that they won't get that opportunity now. I think that really is a disappointing thing because Purdue's newcomers are going to loom really large in what sort of season Purdue has next year, whether it's Brandon Newman, Mason Gillis, Jaden Ivey, Ethan Morton, or Zach Edey. You know, Zach Edey, the window of opportunity is now open for him with Matt Harms gone. I think a lot of us have pegged him for a redshirt for obvious reasons. A, he's not played very long. B, Purdue had Travion Williams and Matt Harms. Now Purdue only has Travion Williams and Emmanuel Duwona. So we will see, you know, the doors open for Zach Edey to help them too. And those games in Spain and that summer would have been a big deal for him as well. Just really, really disappointing. And once again, when I go over 20 minutes, my screen falls asleep. I've got to stop doing this. There's probably a setting I could change that I haven't done yet. But just to kind of wind this thing down, the offseason, I think, is going to limit Purdue's opportunities to get their newcomers up to speed, heading into a season where the newcomers have to be up to speed. The upshot of this is, Caleb First, you just got a trip to Europe, because Purdue is going to move that trip to Europe to next year. So now, instead of Purdue having its five guys who haven't played yet, you know, getting that experience going into a season where Purdue's going to need its newcomers to play a lot, now the very small 2021 class, whether it's two players or three players, gets that extra experience. Not to say that's not important. I just think that this year it would have been really important for Purdue. They're not going to get that opportunity. It's going to be a completely compromised offseason, and that's very disappointing for Purdue. But again, the least of anyone's concerns. I mean, it's a freaking global pandemic. I think college basketball will be just fine. But we will, that's kind of what Purdue's going to miss out on here, and I think that's a big deal. So I have gone way overboard with this. Thank you for watching. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. This has been your GoldenBlack.com Daily Quarantine for Wednesday. It has been brought to you by Follett's Purdue Bookstores, Purdue Federal Credit Union, the 6th Street Dive Restaurant, First Source Bank, East End Grill, and the Charters Team Remax Ability Plus. I want to remind you once again, 6th Street Dive Restaurant in Lafayette remains open for carryout. Bruno's and Arnie's do as well, as does the Whitaker Inn in West Lafayette. Please keep them in mind if you want to support our local businesses. If you just want damn good food, because they all have damn good food. And who among us doesn't like damn good food? I know I do. So please keep them in mind as you're considering your dinner options tonight, whatever it may be. I appreciate everybody. We will talk to you again tomorrow about whatever the hell topic I come up with between now and then. Thanks, everybody.